Obsession number 27192, Reel 5.
Major Hingston, Reel 5. I was asking you what you did in that 14 days when you were around the village you just cleared.
Putting the show together, re-equipping, you know, lost Brim magazines and that sort of thing, getting ourselves together, general maintenance of our vehicles, and trying to knock some sense into the men we'd given stripes to, you know. They say, hey, you take two stripes and take charge of that section. That was all the training they'd had. And getting a bit of training and a bit of discipline into them as far as we could. The French people were particularly good to us. I remember on the first Sunday, they really went to town, and we all billeted in houses. Every single one set out to give us the finest dinner we could possibly eat. Which was very nice of them. But trying to pull the show together and get ourselves out of the rather rabble state we'd got into, optimistic rabble, and get us back into something like a trained battalion.
Was this the first time you'd had a pause in the fighting since? Mm-hmm. Was this the first pause in the fighting for you since you'd arrived?
Yes. Yes. Well, sir, yes. We hadn't had more than a day or a couple of days at best. Up to then, it's the first break we'd had. And we rather needed it. We went from there, you see, straight through into the Holland show.
Did you manage to get any leave to go away to visit?
Yes, I had a day in Paris. We went up in the morning, back in the evening, which I must say was one thing I think might be recorded. I spoke to a dear lady in her 30s. I can't remember what it was. She was English married to a Frenchman, I think, something. Certainly she was English. And she said, you know, we're most impressed that the English have come after all. So I was naturally 12, I was sergeant, so deprecated. I said, no, of course you would. Gave my word, didn't we? I said, no, it's not that at all. He said, but there you are. He said, whole of London half destroyed by these V1s and V2s, the whole of southern England in flames, government evacuated, and still you come. I said, look, you've been listening to too much German propaganda. It's just not true. He said, yeah, all right, you've been told to say that, but we know. And nothing I could do would shake the fact that London was threatened, it's still gone. So he said, all right, I'll have another. But I was really astounded the effect and the extent to which propaganda had gone across through educated, intelligent people, and was irremovably stuck there.
There's no doubt the Germans made very great efforts to.
They were damn good at
propaganda. Yes.
The thing was, I heard from a chap I knew who was doing what he didn't ought to do behind the German lines. Their discipline was rigid. You never got a man, you know, the French have their fruit trees just growing beside the road, but they belong to somebody. You never got a German pulling an apple off it and eating it. Never. They never did, if any German did anything which might cause offence to the French, he was punished very severely. The outlook was, how should I put it? They said, we're here, we've got to be here, we're sorry we're causing you so much inconvenience, we have to do a little bit, I'm very sorry, but we will not cause you any trouble. Unless you step out of line, chum, you step out of line, you'll find what bastards we are. That was their sort of attitude. And they carried it out perfectly. So the French said, well, where the resistance was concerned, they occasionally got to know of who was the resistance man, our rep there. And they would say, well, look, we don't, he's bloody British. They never liked us. And the Germans behaved very well. And you see, it was only necessary to say that fellow was shot. They would give him away in order to maintain the peaceful status quo. And they said, the members of the resistance, heroes of France, well, thank God there are none of them here. That attitude. And they did that. They were very, very good. Their propaganda was much better than ours.
Where was your friend operating? Where was your friend operating? Which part of France was he in?
He was somewhere down Bordeaux, I think, because he got a taste for the wine. And somewhere down there, I don't know what he did. But not right in the hot area, a little, rather possibly cooler area.
From what you were saying about your reception and entertainment, it seems the French had, warm feelings towards you once you arrived. You got a good welcome.
What had happened, they had been occupied for 4.5 years. And they'd been hearing that, of course, we were being flung back into the sea every day. And I remember talking to one Frenchman, again, an intelligent type. And he said, we would see these German battalions, faultless, it turned out, and superbly disciplined. And they said, you British will never break that line. Never, never, never. And he said, and then one day, my wife said, come, look at this. And there was a German patrol coming back, with their tails between their legs. As you always tell that, but it's just so. Looking thoroughly beaten, and he said, I wonder. Then the climax was rather funny. There was a certain farm, there was a huge, great farmyard, enclosed farmyard, with both the Germans and ourselves, there was his headquarters. And a certain day, the German force, whatever it was assembled in there. Fortress, it turned out, perfectly disciplined, perfectly drilled. Called to attention. The officer came out and he stood on a small platform and he harangued them, and there they were. Their morale obviously sky high and absolutely undefeatable. 2 days later, the British battalion was in there. They scrambled in, more or less in step, perhaps, somewhere, and they stood around, scratching themselves. The CO wandered out, not much attention was paid. He climbed on top of a truck, and he addressed them. He said, and this scruffy bunch had beaten that perfectly disciplined show. It was, and he said, it's almost beyond belief. Of course, we had those tanks, which made all the difference. But he said it was almost beyond belief. Incroyable.
You'd been discussing the resistance. Did you have any contact with active members of the resistance during your progress through France?
Men would turn up in villages suddenly. They called themselves francs-tireurs. And they would turn up. They had the FFI badge, the armband, and they would turn up, but not until we got there. And we used them for reconnaissance and finding out what was what and where was where, and what bridges were intact over the various things. I remember some came on the river Oudon. And we said, what bridges are intact? And they said, none, but there's one girder left for one bridge. So, there. And we, the battalion fighting troops, crossed the river by that one steel girder. It's only about that wide, not very funny, a long drop into the water. And he crossed on it and made a bridgehead, and of course, built up. But they, they were useful when we found them. What they were doing before we got there was their business and not ours. But there was no case of being in touch with people who were the other side, behind the enemy lines, before we got there.
But you did find them useful as a source of information.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Yes, no doubt. You see, they knew everybody, they knew every hedgerow, they knew all about everything. They could look like innocent farmers.
You were saying that after your 14 days at the village where you'd been trying to consolidate discipline, make good losses of equipment and have a bit of rest, you moved on. How did you move forward?
One thing I remember about the move forward was that we went past the battlefield in Waterloo. I was unfortunately looking the other way, but my men asked me afterwards, what's that big monument looking like, so and so, and I never saw the bloody thing. I'm very annoyed by that. But we moved on somewhere, life of me, I couldn't remember where, somewhere in southern Holland, ready for the dash to Arnhem.
Was this move in transport?
Yes, in transport, yes. Oh, yes, that was a matter of at least 100 miles, I should think it was. I can't remember now, checked on the map. There was another little incident there, which I think did not necessarily go into the regimental history. We stopped at one village on one occasion. I think it was in Belgium, just for the night, and went on next day. And they said, right, officers can go out for 3 hours. So I went out to my second command, John Rakeen, and we went into the local estaminet, where we got a very warm welcome, particularly from the the publican, who said, "Very glad to see you, monsieur. Very glad indeed. We have been waiting a long time. Have a drink." So he said, "Yes, please," and had a drink. And then he said, "You know, I am so glad that you have come to me. I've been wanting to explain for some time what I think of the Germans." He said, "Your language is so expressive. There is no language to equal it," which rather surprised me. "It is a wonderful language, but there is nobody here who would understand it. Now I can use that word to you." He said, "I have a drink, say, your glass is empty." So we had another drink and had several of these. "It is so good to be able to explain what I think of them in a language which somebody will understand." He said, "I will tell you what I think of them." And he drew himself, filled his chest. He said, "The fucking Germans." You needn't put that in the regimental history. But I never realized before that English was such an expressive language. I suppose there are not many of the Latin languages where you can really get your weight behind a word. I think that's why that word is so popular, because you can really get your weight behind it if you mean to.
It is rather more expressive than the French equivalent.
You put something behind it which means something. I think we paused for a few days somewhere. I can't bring anything to mind I just cannot remember. I believe we did for 2 or 3 days. Then the Arnhem drive up that road started.
Had you any idea about that? Did you have any idea that was going to happen before it started?
It was explained to us. I mean, I think it was some hours or possibly a day or so before my battalion was some way back on this one single road got underway, and it was explained to us that the Airborne were going to capture these three crossings. And, oh yes, yes, we were briefed, we were briefed, I recall. A Dutch warrant officer, I suppose he was, came along where we'd drawn and made a sort of sand table on the ground of what it was like, explaining to us what the ground was like and what we would find and what the difficulties were and so forth. And yes, we knew what to expect, and of course we were thinking it was going to be a walkover.
Did you believe that at the time? Did you think the Germans would just give away?
Always Germans beaten, absolutely beaten, absolutely whacked. We were 3 weeks sitting on the Seine. I call it 3 weeks. Well, we pushed off up that road, which of course was occasionally cut by German counterattacks, but not for long. As you walked up, you would hear small arms on that side and small arms on that side. Didn't matter, you went up through.
Both sides of the road, you'd hear the musketry going.
Mm. The moon.
I was saying that you would hear the musketry going on both sides of the road.
Both sides of the road.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible attack up that single line of road. Now, that lasted until we got to Nijmegen. Mm. Now, the ground between Nijmegen and Arnhem was as flat as a pancake. It was almost estuary stuff, you see. And it would have been wetlands if the Dutch hadn't taken it in hand. And they'd built enormous dikes along the River Waal and the Lek, huge dikes, certainly on the Waal. And the whole country in between was more or less below water level or at water level. So practically every field had been drained off with a wide ditch, a ditch which was anything from 10 to 20 feet wide and well over head height, water level of muck, you see, in between, and God knows how deep in the water. Now, the roads had been built up above it. Now, the only line of advance was along the roads, which, of course, was absolute jam for the defenders. You sighted your anti-tank guns suitably and you blew the tanks to pieces because they could do nothing except sit on the road and look for you. I recall one field, or well, the gate into the field, where there were, I think, 9 brewed-up Shermans who'd been caught on the road, got into the field, couldn't get out of the field, completely, haven't it? 9 of them been brewed up, anyway. And advance, you see, if you put your infantry in, they had to walk up the road too. You couldn't get off it. Because the awful, or you went out into a completely flat and open field, there was no good man or beast, and you couldn't advance. The guards have been criticized by those who don't know what they were talking about, but advance was sure plain suicide. So the 43rd was put in with the Somersets under Hugh Borrowdale, who was also in my regiment, taking the village of...
They're at Elst, weren't they?
Mm?
They're at Elst. Elst.
Oosterhout.
Oosterhout, just on the northern side of the river.
Just on the northern side of the river, over to the left.
Yes.
Yes. And he took more or less a day to do that, and as the afternoon was advancing, I was told to go on to the hamlet of Slakerwick, which was spelled S-L-I-J-K, Slakerwick. You'll probably find it there, which I did. I came under fire and had a couple of fellows wounded, artillery fire, and settled down there. It was then that Taylor decided he would make a dash for Driel. And he went up with squadron tanks, I think, and the company's been made up again three companies, leaving me at Sakewick.
So you were the firm base for this?
Firm base, right back. Now, the distance was, what was near as 8 to 10 miles, right up to it. And the route, and this was an important thing, the route travelled due north for a distance, then it struck a main trunk road running east and west, and it went for a mile, perhaps, east, and then turned north again to get to Driel. Now, there's a lot of Germans trapped away to our left, you see.
To the west.
Who were trying to get away. Mm. And they were using this at intervals to get away.
The trunk road.
Yeah. They were going on the dog leg in the middle. Mm. Well, I was just settling in very nicely, thinking I'm going to get some sleep tonight with any luck. And second in command came along and said, look, pack up, get up by road, you know the route, and rejoin the battalion at Driel. So, uttering imprecations in my mind, I pulled the company together and we started up the road.
Was this in daylight or was this at night?
It was evening, because that had some bearing on it. Now, we got up to that main road, and we started along the main road, and then I heard what I thought was a tank getting in position. Maybe the challenge dropped something off here. I sent somebody up to have a look, and he said, it's one of ours. So, okay, good. It went on. And came under fire from a tank. What had happened was that there was what they called a pocket panzer division at that time, which was one battalion with a squadron of tanks. They had been operating somewhere out to the east, and they'd gone into Liga at night on this particular bit of road on the junction where we wanted to turn north. Well, I walked straight into it, absolutely. I lost three of my four carriers. Two of them were Morton, two of them were company ones. And I came out with one mortar. I didn't lose any men, but we managed to scramble back. I was continually trying to break north, only to find that the other German positions. They were always stumbling into German positions. They didn't want to start anything any more than I did, but I couldn't get away to the north. So eventually I moved back to Sakeway, because it's a rather tame thing to do, but I didn't know what better to do.
Were you in communication with battalion?
Yes, by wireless, yes. Now, what I had subsequently discovered was that when the battalion was doing the move, during the time that I was culling around trying to get out of trouble, Harry Parker, who'd gone through with A Company, came back with a handful of men and a bag full of anti-tank stuff and set up a roadblock on the road to the east, the other side of the battalion. The first thing that happened was that a dispatch rider, I think, or a motorcycle combination, I forget which, I think it's a combination, went back and hit one of his landmines and was blown to buggery. And his passenger, that was, it must have been a combination, his passenger was wounded and yelled for help. So they sent four tanks to deal with it. The first one also hit some landmines, very conveniently, and got in trouble. The others tried to manoeuvre, forgetting about the ditch, and three of them slid right down into these deep ditches and was knocked out, of which Harry got a mention. And
How did he knock them out? Did he use the pier to knock them out?
You had these wide ditches, 10, 15 feet deep. They slid down sideways into them, and now they stayed. There was no further use to man or beast. Now, what had happened was the battalion, when they were going eastwards, and the dog leg preparatory to going northwards, they struck the Germans coming westwards to take up their leaguer position. How quite it happened, I don't know, because there's still a certain amount of daylight left when I first approached the area. And when the patrol came back, it had got dark. It was tuck and go like that. But the battalion had gone up at least an hour before, or more. Anyway, they literally bumped into the Germans. And the leading jeep literally bumped into it, and the sergeant major who was in it, jumping out of the thing, knocked his head on the gun of the German tank. Close to that. How they did indeed, I just don't know. Anyway, they knew damn well the Germans were there, and they had a bit of a how to deal with them. But never told me that the Germans were there.
So you were ordered up, but you weren't warned. What was
it?
Ordered
up, but not warned, which was I felt rather sore about that one all along. However, somewhat depleted, I arrived at battalion headquarters at Driel. We were right on the bank, and the Polish para, who had dropped south of the Lech, were there too. The Polish troops, as fighters, were superb. As organized troops, commanders handling troops as they should be handled, they were punk. Now, that next night, they planned to get the Polish para brigade across. They had the large landing craft, which held, I think, something like 16 men or something like that. And the Poles first said, no, we never put more than 8 in ours. So they put 8 in. Now, the crossing was unopposed. It started at 10:30, and the Germans opened fire, spotted them and opened fire, and put an end to it at 1 o'clock, which, to my way of thinking, is 2.5 hours. Plenty of boats, plenty of people. They got one company across. That was the Poles all through. I believe that particular company of the Poles fought like savages. Covered themselves in glory.
There weren't enough of them.
Weren't enough of them. By that time, they should have got at least a battalion across. A battalion getting across by then might have, who knows.
What were you doing at this time? Were you
holding
the perimeter?
Holding
back at the bank.
If anything was going to happen, we were going to fire everything we could in all directions.
Were you expecting the Germans to attack from the east or from the west? Or
no, we were concerned with the Germans who were dealing with the 1st Airborne north of the river. We weren't in sight of the 1st Airborne, but we might have been if there hadn't been the trees.
Yes. What could you see looking across the river from your positions?
The other bank. Not much more than the other bank. I could see the bridge, the famous bridge, arching up there, and that was about the only feature. Now, firing died down, morning. The next night, the Worcesters went over. It was an act of extreme courage. The Germans were firing before they got to the water, and they fought their way across. They got a company over, and in face of an appalling heavy fire. And it was a very, very fine chap. I think got DSO for it. And